Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an attempt to understand why Donald Trump persists in trying to make deals favorable to Russia on Putin's terms, and speak with Dr. Michael Carpenter, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense with responsibility for Russia, who served as a foreign policy advisor to Vice President Biden and as director for Russia at the National Security Council. Now a senior director of the Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement at the University of Pennsylvania, he joins us to discuss his article at Defense One, "The U.S. Should Steer Clear of Russian Help in Syria." We'll look into the folly of working with the Russians to combat ISIS, since Putin's strategy is to support his proxy Assad at all costs, without recognizing that Assad is the main reason why Islamic terrorists have a foothold in Syria. Then we'll examine the reasons why Trump and the Republicans have sold their souls to Russia following a recent poll that finds 48% of Republicans see nothing wrong with Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting with Russian operatives offering to help elect Trump and damage his opponent. James Kirchick, a journalist and foreign correspondent who was a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution and the author of The End of Europe, Dictators, Demagogues, and the Coming Dark Age, joins us to discuss his article at Politico, "How the GOP Became the Party of Putin." And since Trump's core supporters live in a bubble of delusion impervious to facts and evidence, we will assess the extent to which Trump's advisors like Bannon and Gawker have followed the playbook of Putin's media guru, Vladislav Surkov, to create a parallel universe of alternative facts in which there is no objective truth, but where only subjective truth matters. Then finally, we will speak with Abby Gluck, a professor of law and the faculty director of the Solomon Center for Health Law and Policy at Yale Law School. She joins us to try to make sense of the many tweets and statements coming from Donald Trump in the wake of the Republican Senate's latest failure to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, which Trump is praising as, quote, a pretty impressive vote by any standard, while declaring he wants Obamacare to fail and that, quote, Republicans are not going to own it. And joining us now is Dr. Michael Carpenter, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense with responsibility for Russia, Ukraine, Eurasia, the Balkans, and conventional arms control. He previously served in the White House as a foreign policy advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and was director for Russia at the National Security Council. Prior to that, he was a career foreign service officer with the State Department, and he's now senior director of the Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement at the University of Pennsylvania. And he has an article at Defense One, "The U.S. Should Steer Clear of Russian Help in Syria." Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Michael Carpenter.
Glad to be with you.
And I think the puzzlement about Donald Trump's attitudes to the Russians, in particular his penchant for making excuses for Putin and quite often appearing to be hard on allies like Angela Merkel, hanging up on the Australian Prime Minister, etc. There's a puzzlement there about why be nice to our enemies and unpleasant to our allies. But let's start with the G20 meeting. We don't know what went on in that meeting. The so-called adults in the room, Generals Mattis and McMaster, were not invited in. But on the surface, to my mind, there was a great disadvantage to the United States. You basically had two businessmen, Tillerson and Trump, negotiating with a foreign policy pro Lavrov and a former intelligence professional, Putin. And my sense is that our side got hosed. Just in terms of the meeting itself, how did it strike you?
Well, just in terms of the lineup, I think the U.S. was at a disadvantage for exactly the reasons you say. I think between President Trump and Secretary Tillerson, they had less than 12 months of government experience, whereas on the other side, you know, something like several decades worth. So clearly they were novices compared to Putin and Lavrov. And I think it shows in terms of how the meeting was read out, but also in terms of the substance of what was discussed.
But there seems to be a broader problem, though, with this recent poll coming out that 48% of Republicans think that Donald Trump Jr. was right to take that meeting in Trump Tower with Russians who might well have been intelligence officials promising dirt on Hillary Clinton. The president himself, of course, has defended the meeting, saying, oh, it was nothing. But, you know, of course, people in politics deal with opposition research. But my understanding is that...
Yeah, that's not true. I mean, of course, you may be interested in opposition research, but not when an adversarial foreign power is the one that's offering you the dirt on your opposition candidate.
Right.
And that's a huge difference.
Sure. And I believe that normal people would have immediately called the FBI. So, but I brought it up to indicate that this is not just a problem that we have with the president, but it seems that the Republican Party itself is in denial. We've got a congressman out here, Dana Rohrabacher, who is Trump's biggest champion. And that's not to suggest that on the political left, there's not apologists like Oliver Stone made this four-hour Valentine about Putin for Showtime. So there's something peculiar going on. Have you got your finger on it at all, Dr. Carpenter?
Well, you know, it's hard to say what's happening. I mean, I think a lot of Republicans, certainly in Congress, are hesitant to cross the president at this point in time. I think in private, a lot of them are a lot more worried about what's going on in terms of the possible connections between Trump and Russia, and I mean those connections that are being investigated right now, than they let on to be. And so, you know, you've seen some of the leaked reports about concerns, both about Trump and Rohrabacher by prominent Republicans. And I think that's probably, I suspect at least, that that's probably a commonly held view in private. But in public right now, they're still in lockstep with their party leadership.
And of course, you're referring to the meeting that took place, a high-level meeting with top Republicans of the House, with Paul Ryan and Kevin McCarthy mentioned that he thought both Trump and Rohrabacher were on the Russian payroll. And he said, swear to God. And then, of course, immediately the speaker
immediately
said,
Paul Ryan tried to shush him up. Yeah,
right, exactly. And we know that that's true because Evan McMullen, who ran for president, was in that meeting and has verified the facts. So there is something going on there. But you're somebody who has actually dealt with the Russians. And for example, in Syria, you met with the delegation of U.S. generals with your Russian counterparts across the table trying to negotiate the very thing that Trump keeps talking about. You know, after this G20 meeting, his big takeaway was that, oh, we're going to have a ceasefire in Syria. Well, that didn't exactly go very far. So tell us about it seems to me there's a massive gulf between the practical experience that you've had and this kind of aspirational thinking on the part of Trump.
Well, so, I mean, it bothers me and it worries me that Mr. Trump wants desperately to do some sort of deal with Russia almost at any cost. And you have to wonder why that is and why he spoke so admiringly and fawningly about Mr. Putin during the campaign and to this very day. And in fact, when confronted with information about killings that go on in Russia, of journalists sort of brushed it off and said, well, that happens here in the United States. I mean, that's just that type of rhetoric I find outrageous. I think a lot of other Americans do as well. But as far as cooperating with Russia, I mean, this is a power that sees the U.S. And the West more broadly as enemy number one. And so the notion that we can have our interests align in Syria is a false one, because Russia wants to take the U.S. down a couple notches in Syria. They have no interest in trying to work in a creative and constructive way to have a political resolution to the conflict there. What they want to do is prop up Assad, and they're working with their allies on the ground, who, by the way, are Lebanese Hezbollah and Iran. So doing a deal with Russia and Syria is very much like doing a deal with Iran or doing a deal with Lebanese Hezbollah. I don't think most Americans would think that that would be a good idea for us to work with either of those two actors to try to achieve some sort of modus vivendi in Syria. But that's essentially what you would be doing if you negotiated with Russia.
And again, I'm speaking with Dr. Michael Carpenter, who's a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense with responsibilities for Russia, Ukraine, Eurasia, the Balkans, and conventional arms control, and previously served in the White House as a foreign policy advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and as Director for Russia at the National Security Council. And prior to that, he was a career Foreign Service officer with the State Department, and he's now a Senior Director of the Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement at the University of Pennsylvania. And he has an article at Defense One, "The U.S. Should Steer Clear of Russian Help in Syria." So if indeed there is any collusion, and I guess at some point or other we'll know from what the Robert Mueller's investigation is looking into, there appears to be from just this recent email chain from Donald Jr. that there's evidence of collusion But, you know, putting that aside, could you make the case that the fact that we have such an erratic, inexperienced president who has alienated allies, etc., and apparently the reports that you hear from the G20 was that he wasn't so much shunned, but at least people were kind of uncomfortable with him, and he was very much the odd man out. Has Putin, in effect, got what he wants in the sense that we have an unusual situation with a president who is weakening America? I think, just personally, I think it's happening at an extraordinary rate, but that seems to be the consensus of a lot of the foreign reports we got from the G20, at least, you know, headlines in the New York Times, you know, U.S. once dominated the G20, now isolated on the sidelines.
Absolutely. I mean, Putin must be overjoyed. Trump has not only criticized NATO, but he's been had a very adversarial relationship with a lot of our closest allies, including Angela Merkel, but also with others. He's been rude over the phone. He's chastised them in public, and he seemed to make common cause with Mr. Putin, who poses probably the greatest threat, together with ISIS and other extremist groups, to Europe and to our vision of a Europe whole, free, and at peace. So, he's got it all backwards, but it's music to Mr. Putin's ears, because he is fomenting a rift between the United States on the one hand and our European allies on the other. There's also chaos and confusion back here in Washington and at home, and that is exactly what Mr. Putin wants, so that he can carry out his subversive activities in other countries. And it's also diverting U.S. attention from other challenges, like the Syrian civil war, like the situation in Afghanistan and other parts of the world. So all of this is very, very damaging to our national security. And the direction that we're going in doesn't leave one with any hope that things are going to get better anytime soon, unfortunately.
Well, I think a lot of liberals and progressives take a certain comfort in the idea that there are some adults in the room with General McMaster and General Mattis, but I'm not entirely sure whether they're actually in the room. I mean, we know that, for example, on Afghanistan that you just mentioned, that Stephen Bannon and Jared Kushner, along with Feinberg, the hedge fund billionaire who owns DynCorp, and Eric Prince, the founder of the mercenary army Blackwater, who has a private army now in the Emirates in the Gulf, they apparently have floated this idea of privatizing the war in Afghanistan. Now, I understand they met with General Mattis on Saturday, and he shot it down. But the fact that it even got as far as it did is just extraordinary to my mind.
Well, it's true. And, you know, there are a couple reasons why General McMaster may have been excluded from the meeting with Putin. One is that on the U.S. side, the sort of the Trump inner circle, the West Wing advisors, if you will, Jared and Ivanka and others, decided that it would be better to minimize leaks by excluding him. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that the Russians saw an advantage in having Putin and Lavrov in the meeting, and so they proposed only those two, and the U.S. went along with it, which, if that was the scenario, that would have been a huge mistake, a rookie mistake on our part. But in either case, you have, precisely as you said, someone who has a sophisticated understanding of the threat Russia poses, who is not in the room, who is not privy to the conversation, not able to correct mistakes that are made. And by the way, you know, one of the interesting things about the G20 is that not only was there that bilateral in which Trump essentially gave away the store by essentially acknowledging that he was going to move on from the greatest influence operation that Russia has ever directed against the United States. That in itself is a huge blow to our national security. But then in addition to that bilateral meeting, Ian, there was, I've heard reports, there was a separate meeting where during the leaders' dinner that same day, in the middle of the dinner, Mr. Trump went over to Mr. Putin and sat down next to him in an empty chair, and they carried on for the better part of an hour in a very jovial, backslapping type of way. And so we haven't had any readout of that second conversation, which was a fairly lengthy one, and where a lot of business could have been done. And so, you know, you take that, you take the Donald Trump Jr. meeting, you take the Kushner meeting with a former and former is in quotes because there's never really a former Russian intelligence officer who now runs a major Russian bank. All of these meetings have sort of come out in drips and drabs. There was no transparency about them from the start. It's only as the media starts to dig that this stuff comes out. And you can't help but think that there's a lot of obfuscation going on about the exact nature of the conversations between this administration and the Russian side.
Well, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michael Carpenter, but Fiona Hill, who is the National Security Council expert on Russia, formerly with the Brookings Institution, somebody that I've known over the years who speaks Russian, apparently the Russians vetoed her. They refer to her as a hawk.
Well, I don't know if that's true. Fiona, I've known Fiona for years as well. I think very, very highly of her. She's a true expert on Russia. She's written a great book on Mr. Putin. In fact, it's a book that Mr. Trump ought to read. It ought to be at the top of his reading list. But if they vetoed her and we didn't push back, again, that's a concession which speaks very poorly of the arrangements for the meeting. She certainly should have been in the meeting. She should have been a note taker there. And McMaster should have been in that meeting, too.
So just to do, I touched on the Afghanistan privatization with Eric Prince, who, of course, is the brother of the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos. And the fact that they had that meeting in itself is pretty alarming. Do you have any concerns about the idea that you have players like Eric Prince with private armies in the Gulf that could, in fact, trigger, you know, wider conflicts? The idea that they, that Bannon and company, and it's not just Bannon that concerns me, at least, there's a sort of troika with this Hungarian fascist, Sebastian Gorka and Stephen Miller, seem to be the brains trust along with Jared. And as I mentioned earlier, I'm not sure that how much comfort we can take in the idea that the adults in the room have some sway or whether indeed they are in the room. But the fact that they were able to get this proposal to privatize the war in Afghanistan, which is absolutely insane, it scares the hell out of me, frankly.
Well, look, absolutely. And early in the administration in January, there was a move afoot to try to lift sanctions against Russia. And as soon as some of the bureaucrats within the administration got wind of it, and it leaked out into the press and then over to Capitol Hill, you know, it was put on the back burner. But the fact that that initiative was even attempted is incredibly alarming. It would have been a concession from the get-go, which would have been disastrous for our policy on Russia. And some of these other meetings that you've alluded to sort of testifies to the fact that you have this national security professional apparatus. You mentioned the generals McMaster and Mattis and Kelly over at the Department of Homeland Security on the one hand. And then you've got the inner circle, you've got the folks in the West Wing, members of Trump's family, but some of these other surrogates who are on the outside, not formally in the White House, but speak on behalf of the president. That's a very dangerous situation to be in. You don't want to ever have a sort of a parallel group of advisors that have their own agenda, which is at odds with the members of the cabinet who are formally executing policy in the executive branch. It's just a recipe for, A, failure of policy, but, B, it could lead to nefarious types of policy outcomes. And, you know, you think about, for example, the attitude towards the European Union. Well, Mr. Bannon has been incredibly hostile and antithetical to the EU as an institution. But the EU is, you know, the basis for U.S.-EU trade, for American prosperity with Europe. It's sort of the basis for our transatlantic alliance. And so the notion that we would want to weaken the EU from our end because we don't value the fact that it's a supranational institution, to me, is folly. But it also, it displays this rift that you have between the professionals. Like, surely McMaster and Mattis understand the value of NATO and the EU, but then you have these ideologues on the other side, some of whom you mentioned, who do not, and who in fact take a very hostile, antithetical view to both NATO and the EU.
Well, just in closing, Dr. Michael Carpenter, you mentioned the deficit of patriotism here. So, to some extent, there have been a couple of Republican senators, Lindsey Graham and John McCain, who have been critical, and to some extent also has Marco Rubio has been critical, although he did seem to back off a little in order to get his deal to cut back on the initiative that Barack Obama took with the Cubans. But is there a chance, you think, or do you see any kind of indications that the Republicans, particularly the Republican senators and the foreign policy people, will, and it is an irony to think, you know, I used to work in arms control years ago in the Soviet days, and they, Russians actually, or the Soviets actually preferred to deal with Republicans. They were a little leery of Democrats. But it seems like the Republican Party has squandered its foreign policy credentials. I think people like Brent Scowcroft have got to be really in pain over this. But now, is there a chance that any of them will pony up in respite of the statistic I read out about this recent poll that indicates that 48% of Republicans think that Donald Trump Jr.'s meeting with the Russians was okay?
Well, you know, but that's a poll of the population at large. You know, I think I actually do have faith in some of the Republican leaders in Congress. You know, I testified on Russia with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in July of 2016 when I was still a Pentagon official. And some of the toughest questions were from some of the Republican members of the committee, including Chairman Corker, but also others. And, you know, if I don't think it's really possible for them to do an about-face on this, and I don't think they will. I think they understand, I think intellectually they understand, but I also think in their hearts they understand that Russia's trying to subvert our democracy. And so I think they'll come around eventually. And I think, you know, in the House of Representatives, I think some of the members are maybe a little bit less savvy in terms of their understanding of foreign affairs and the threat that Russia poses. But I think with time, they are starting to understand. I also testified since I've been out of government, and I spoke about Russian influence operations and how they operate in the gray zone. And I have to say, in that testimony as well, I found that, you know, the questions were equally incisive from the Republican side as from the Democratic side. So at the end of the day, I guess I do have some hope that Republicans will see this as a threat to our national security, and that they will rally around the flag and they'll do the right thing. You know, it may take some time before we get there. And obviously politics is a huge issue here and it'll get in the way. But ultimately, you know, I do have faith that that they will understand the threat and act accordingly.
Well, Dr. Michael Carpenter, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Michael Carpenter, who's a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense with responsibility for Russia, Ukraine, Eurasia, the Balkans, and conventional arms control, and previously served in the White House as a foreign policy advisor to Vice President Joe Biden and as Director for Russia at the National Security Council. And prior to that, he was a career Foreign Service officer with the State Department, and he's now Senior Director of the Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement at the University of Pennsylvania. And he has an article, Defense One, the U.S. should steer clear of Russian help in Syria. We're going to take a brief station break and be back examining the reasons why Trump and the Republicans have sold their souls to Russia.